weight loss questions, diet questions, exercise questions, and even a question on diabetes. Yes, it's the email question and answer show, all today on episode 36 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to show number 36 here at Fat to Fit Radio. What's going on this week, Jeff?
Well, you know, it seems like it's been forever since we did a show, because the last show that we actually recorded was about 3 weeks ago. So I went on holidays, and we had to do the show a little bit earlier. So how's your weight loss been since now we're finally caught up to recording right when we're going to put out the show?
Well, as of today, I am down to 259 and a half-ish, you know, fluctuate there on the scale. So I've actually lost about 36 and a half pounds, which unfortunately, since we've done every 2 weeks on the last few shows, losing in the a pound a week battle, but still down 36 and a half since the beginning of the show.
Well, as long as you never fall behind the number of the show, you know, show number 36, 36 pounds lost, as long as you never fall behind, you'll be okay.
All right. I love arbitrary goals like that. That's great. But how was your holiday? Where'd you go?
Well, I was in Cancun for 2 weeks, and we were at an all-inclusive, had a really great vacation, went on 4 diving trips. We went to Chichen Itza, lots of sightseeing, lots of activities. So it was a really good break for me. But while I was there, I was not, of course, forgetting about the show. When I was flipping the channels here, and here's some Mexican things that you might not know, there was an ad that was on TV all the time. Now, I really don't understand much Spanish, just the basic stuff. You know, I know how to say, you know, ¿dónde es baños? Where's the bathrooms? But if they don't point, I have no idea what they're saying after that. But on TV, I got enough to understand. They were showing people eating, you know, at restaurants and enjoying their food. And then they kept saying, lose 5 kilograms in 10 days. And that's about 12 pounds in 10 days. And what they kept showing was a person putting a patch on their hip. So this was obviously a weight loss patch, and people were just eating normal food. So I guess a lot of these kind of scams and weight loss schemes, they're everywhere in the world. Even if you don't understand the language, you can understand from the commercial what they're trying to get at. And even down there, they're offering unrealistic things. Oh, and one other thing. We did some sightseeing where we rented a car and we were driving around in the country. And we went through a lot of small towns and we'd stop off at the stores in the towns, you know, to get some water and stuff. And one thing I really noticed in the small towns, and I'm not talking right in the tourist areas, it is really true that the people in the small towns, I would say 60 to 70% were overweight easily. And when we went into these small stores, all they really had on the shelves, they had lots of junk food, Coke products, but all of the stuff down the aisles that people were purchasing, almost 100% were processed foods, lots of canned meats like Spam, nothing really good and healthy. It was all the kind of stuff that we talk about. We're exporting all of our cheap processed food to third world countries. Well, that's where it is. And I was really surprised to see in these poor, poor towns, lots and lots of overweight people.
We've read studies and things that, you know, showing that Mexico really is growing in their, the obese people, but it's another thing to witness it firsthand. And, you know, it's funny, I'm going down on the cruise to Ensenada in just a couple days here. And so I'll be interesting to see for myself if that's the case in Ensenada as well.
Another thing when I was down there, a lot of the things that I tried seemed a lot sweeter than what we have up here. You know, like I had a Coke down there. I normally don't drink Coke, but this was just like syrup to me. It just was so sweet. I couldn't even finish it. I was really surprised at the difference.
Oh, you know, I've heard that actually as well. There was, you know, all our sodas here use corn syrup, but there are some places around the world that Coke is made with, say, with regular sugar, and people really covet those. You know, they'll, sometimes they'll have them over at Costco, and you can go in and get some of the Russian Coke. It has real sugar in it. But, you know, I'm not sure about the Mexican Coke. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to guess 100% that it's probably corn syrup, but it may be a lot sweeter.
So what's been new with you while I've been off vacationing?
You know, it's just been a lot of the same old around here. The kids are home from school, so they're driving my wife nuts. So that's kind of been the thing. You know, we've been doing little trips here and there with the Legoland. That was fun. But also what happened here, boy, you know, I know you bought one of these Creative Zens, kind of similar to the one I had, but I plugged mine into a USB port here recently, and the thing just fried. So I was unable to listen to any podcasts. I was limping along with a little player, but I just got here a new iPod Nano, a nice little 8 gigabyte model. So I'm enjoying that and catching up on my podcast that I listen to as well. Okay, now we're going to get into the meat of the show here, and we're going to change the format a little bit. Normally, we do some questions and answers. We do some news items. This time, we're just going to head right into the questions and answers. We get a lot of great comments, a lot of great emails, and over the last few weeks, we've received a whole bunch, so we decided to just kind of do a question and answer session here in this show and try to give you our feedback here on these great questions.
You see, otherwise, most of these answers would probably come out in a couple months from now, but we thought this would be a show that just has a whole bunch of different questions from all over the place, and we'll cover them in a little bit of detail, and the ones that you kind of want some more information, we'll do them in more detail in a couple more shows.
Yep, so we have our first question here is from Stephanie, and she wrote, "Dear Russ and Jeff, I'm writing to let you guys know I think you sort of glossed over something in episode number 35. About the guy who lost weight on a McDonald's only diet. Exercise, no matter what your size, must be part of this lifestyle change, no matter what your size. Somebody weighing 300 or more pounds can exercise with their doctors okay, but some exercises may need to be adapted to suit an unfit and unconditioned person. Walking, pool exercises, adaptive yoga, weight training using machines with body weight supported, sit in fit style classes and videos are just examples of some exercises most overweight people can start with. Richard Simmons even has exercise DVDs that have participants that are large in the 300 plus club. Unfit folks need to start out slowly and build up to a more fit body and not expect too much too soon. I just think that the McDonald's diet or putting off exercise until he lost weight was another way he was deluding himself into thinking that what he was doing was healthy and solving his lifestyle issue. Thanks for your show, Russ and Jeff. You debunk myths and aim to bring out the truth and do it in an informative, friendly way."
All right. Now, first of all, just to remind our listeners from the last show, we talked about a guy who lost 80 pounds on a, quote, McDonald's diet. And what he was really doing was just starving himself and eating McDonald's salads and a little bit of their chicken and some apple slices. It was really a starvation diet. He wasn't exercising, and he believed that after losing this 80 pounds, this had taught him a lifestyle change and he would not gain the weight back. And we believe that he is just going to start gaining this weight back because he did not make a lifestyle change. And, you know, in fact, we probably figure he's already gaining the weight back a couple weeks after this story broke that he lost all this weight at McDonald's. Now, one of the things that we just glossed over, and we agree with Stephanie when we listened back to our show, we didn't really call him on the fact that he wasn't exercising. He said something about once he lost the weight, then he could start exercising. And we should have called him on that, you're right. And we had something way back, maybe 30 shows ago, where there was a person who was really heavy. It was an email that we read. And this person was just starting to exercise slightly at work. And for him, it was literally standing up in his desk and doing a couple minutes of trying to do some squats because he was so heavy, he wasn't even able to be walking yet. And you're right, we should have called it. And any exercise is better than nothing. It's going to have those effects of speeding up your metabolism, working your muscles, etc.
Yeah, you know, and being almost 300 pounds when we started the show, you know, there are things that you cannot do at 300 pounds. You cannot go jogging. I am a living example of that. I went jogging and I hurt my knee, but there are things that you can do. You can walk. All the things that Stephanie mentioned in her email, the sit and fit style classes, the water classes are great also. So you know, there are things you can do if you are a 300 plus pound person and you don't need to wait until you lose the weight. And you shouldn't wait until you lose the weight. You need to get your heart pumping and really exercise the lungs as well as those muscles.
That's right, because I think there's really four parts to losing weight. There's all of the knowledge, which you're getting from this show. There is the eating portion, the exercise portion, and the motivation portion. And if you're missing any of those pieces, you're really not going to be successful. But let's move on to our next question. And the next question comes from Leslie, and she writes, "Hi guys, I really enjoy your show. I'm working hard to lose about 30 pounds. I read this article today about keeping a food diary to lose more weight. According to research, dieters who kept food diaries lost twice as much weight as those who didn't. I'm already tracking my workouts, and I'm going to start keeping a food diary too. I'd be interested to hear what you think of food diaries. Thank you, and keep up the good work."
Well, one of the first things we mentioned on a show from, again, way back in the past, is know what you're eating. And there's no better way to do that than to keep a food diary, keep a food log. While people think that they know how many calories they're eating, most of the time, they woefully underestimate by a vast amount. On a previous show, we mentioned a survey that was done at a Subway, I believe it was a Salmon on Sandwiches. And the customers there were asked how many calories they were eating. And they had a sandwich and some chips and a drink. And those people estimated they were eating about 300 to 350 calories. And while the real calorie count was closer to 1,000. And, you know, in this world, we have more and more processed foods, and there are more calories present in these foods than we think. And by taking the time to create that food diary, number one, when you start out, find out what you're eating, then modify that and change to what you should be eating and get that calorie count where it should be. And, you know, there's a great way to do that with a website called The Daily Plate. I've mentioned that in the past. I really love and suggest that anybody who wants to keep a food diary online, it's a great way to do it. And, you know, with that information, it's going to be easier for you to lose weight. And, you know, I saw that same, I don't know if it was the same article or a different one, but I'll have a link in the show notes to a podcast. It's a 60-second podcast from Scientific American. This is where I saw this article. So take a look at that or take a listen to that and see what you think.
That's right. We always talk about how easy it is to gain weight. You know, an extra 100 calories a day, you know, that could be one cookie. That puts on more than 10 pounds in a year, but it's the same when you're losing weight. Eating an extra 100 calories when you're trying to lose weight, that keeps you back from losing 10 pounds in a year. It all does add up. You don't have to be exactly precise your entire life, but you need a couple weeks or a couple months to really understand how many calories are in certain items, and it really helps you for the long term. Let's move on to question number three.
Yes, our third question is from Ina, and she wrote, "Hi guys. First, thank you for the great podcasts. I love all that you do. I've stumbled upon high-intensity interval training and thought it could be fun to try and maybe get me out of the slump. I generally go on an elliptical or a treadmill for about 45 to 50 minutes and burn about 500 to 600 calories. With high-intensity interval training, maximum recommended time is 20 minutes with some warm-up and cool-down. I do about 3 minutes of each. My intervals are 30 seconds of high-intensity and 45 seconds of recovery. Not slow, but at a good pace, maybe a 6 on a scale from 1 to 10. However, I have only been burning about 200 calories. I am wondering if I am setting myself back, and is a calorie still a calorie? I read that this type of training burns fat for 24 hours after the work has been completed, but I feel like if I only burn 200 calories, I should still do more. What are your thoughts? Any feedback is greatly appreciated."
Well, I've got a lot of things to say about this because there was actually quite a lot of questions in there. First of all, losing weight is actually a little bit more than just the calories. There's some other factors in there. Now, you were asking about the afterburn effect, but it really isn't going to be hundreds and hundreds of calories. It's most likely going to be under 100 calories. Now, the afterburn is one of those things that have been spouted from personal trainers for years. And when the scientific literature started to show that the effect was a little bit smaller, they just really ignored it. But there is a benefit of the afterburn. It's just not hundreds and hundreds. So if you only burn 200 calories, you're not going to have the equivalent calories burned as 500 or 600. So that's just kind of the first point. As a little bit of an aside, the afterburn of weightlifting is greater than doing cardiovascular. So if you lift weights, you get a longer benefit. But there are two main benefits of high-intensity interval training. And number one, it improves your cardiovascular fitness super, super fast. And it raises it to a lot higher level than if you were just doing moderate exercise, the exact same thing day after day. Number two, It can not only break you out of a slump, but it will also keep your body from getting into a slump in the first place. So let me just go into an explanation of why that is. So first of all, your body adapts very quickly to the type of exercise that you're doing. That's why if you do the exact same exercise every single day, it seems to get easier and easier. So for example, if you did a 1 mile run every day at the exact same pace, it's going to seem to get easier and easier. At the start, you might be sweating and breathing heavily, and after a few months, you might not even be out of breath at all. Now, there is a downside to training that people don't consider. You actually start to burn fewer and fewer calories if you do the exact same exercise. Now, it doesn't just seem to be easier to do. Your body has actually adapted, and it really truly takes less effort. So you think when you're first starting out and you do that run, you're really tired and you felt like you did a lot of work. And, you know, a couple months later, it seems easier. Your body adapted and it actually was easier. Sure, you were in a little bit better shape, but you actually took less energy to get it done. Now, how you keep yourself from getting stuck in this rut of getting less calories out of your workouts is to keep your body guessing so that it just can't adapt and get used to that exact same exercise. And that's why you want to vary your workouts and make this high-intensity interval training part of your routine. So here's one way to think about it. If you burn 600 calories every single workout doing the exact same type of workout for a year, maybe at the end of that year, you're going to end up burning 100 to 200 calories less per workout. If you throw in a couple high-intensity interval training sessions per week, you might just keep your body from adapting as much. So I guess kind of to summarize, doing the high-intensity interval training, you're going to get in great cardiovascular shape really quick, and it's going to keep your body from getting stuck in a rut. And that's probably the most important thing that you want to stop happening if you're trying to lose weight for, you know, more than a week or two. If you want some long-term weight loss, it's going to take you a number of months to get down to your goal weight. Make sure you don't get stuck in this slump. So that's everything about high-intensity interval training.
Yeah, I think that's one of the two injustices in getting fit. The first one being that the more weight you lose, the less your food your body needs to maintain itself. That's just an injustice, number one. And number two, the more you work out, the more you need to work out to burn that same number of calories. But I guess the payoff is a better, healthier body at the end.
Oh, and here's another thing. You know when someone's 50 or 100 pounds overweight and they take a couple flight of stairs up a building and you see them come out of the stairway and they're sweating like a pig? Well, when you start to train, at the start, you don't need to sweat as much because it's getting easier and easier. And then when you get in really good shape, it turns back because your body becomes so adapted. As soon as you start to work out, it's instantly trying to cool yourself and you start sweating as much as someone who is overweight and out of shape. It's kind of a really weird effect. Have you ever heard of that, Russ?
I have not. So you get sweatier too. Now, that's the third injustice.
Yeah, because your body gets adapted to working out and being very efficient at cooling yourself.
That's not very popular an idea, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. So no, it's the grass is always greener on the other side, and there's always going to be some downsides to the upsides, I guess.
All right, well, let's get to question number four.
And this email comes from Tresha, and she writes, "Hi, I love your podcast, but I have a question. I was talking to a friend about training for a marathon, and she was saying that she would rather train for a half marathon because she was trying to lose weight, and training for a full marathon would cause her to bulk up too much. Is this true?"
Well, we've had a couple emails from people who did not lose as much weight as they expected when training for a half or a full marathon. But it'd be very hard to bulk up while training for a marathon without excessive overeating. Running, by its nature, is a non-muscle building activity, and it's very hard to bulk up muscle, but not hard to bulk up fat if you eat too much. And if she's worried about getting very muscular legs, it's not going to happen by running. Legs will start to look more muscular from the increased tone of the muscles and less leg fat, but bulking up leg muscle would be next to impossible just from running. And really, from my own experience, I know in high school, when we would work all off season and put on muscle in the gym, and then we would get out and start running, and some of those muscles would see them lean out. People lean out, and they wouldn't just be as defined because those muscles were just not worked as often. And boy, the coach got really mad at those people who did a dual sport, running and football, because the two don't use muscles the same way. And those who were runners, they were fast and all, but they didn't have that explosive ability after doing track for a long period of time.
Now, with this question too, I was trying to think of the possibilities of why people would start gaining weight when they're running longer distances. And I have a couple possibilities here. Most runners only run. That's the only thing they're doing. And this is just like the last email. Over time, your body will burn less calories for the exact same distance. So if you're not varying the training, perhaps your eating is staying exactly the same and you're burning a little bit less calories through your running. You could gain a little weight there. Not too likely, but it's possible. Now, even if your body becomes very adapted to running, increasing your distances to the distances required to complete a marathon or even a half marathon will, nevertheless, it's still going to increase the number of calories that you're burning. Even if you're more and more efficient, when you increase the distances, at the end of the day, you're going to burn more calories. And the amount of calories that you burn in a run is a combination of how much you weigh and the distance. So remember, theoretically, if you walk or run the same distance, you're going to burn the same amount of calories. It's just that you will burn the same number of calories in a shorter time if you run faster. And of course, there's a little bit of the afterburn effect there too. Now, here's my theory of how I think people can gain weight when they're training for a marathon. Now, there's this whole industry of energy bars and sports bars. And when people start running these longer distances, they read in the magazines and they hear from friends, oh, you have to be eating all the time. You don't want your carbohydrates to run out while you're running because you're going to hit the wall a lot sooner. And people start eating these energy bars, which are, you know, relatively speaking, about the same calories as a chocolate bar. And I've seen people go on these long runs with three or four of these bars. So they're eating 600 to 700 calories while they're running, which is really, you know, if they're running 15, 20 kilometers, they're only going to get a net benefit of maybe 500 calories burned because they kept eating so much throughout it. What I suggest, if you're going for those longer distances, do be careful of the calories. You don't have to have huge meals worth of calories to keep your body going. I know some people who are happy just having, you know, one or two bananas along the entire run. But of course, it could be worse. There are some people whose running program is basically running from the couch to the fridge and then back. So it could be worse.
That's my favorite distance. All right, let's get on to question number 5. And this is from Mike. First off, I've been listening to your podcast for about a month and I really enjoy it. I'm in the process of losing about 25 pounds. Only 17 more to go. Good job. And the program has provided some very helpful info, as well as great encouragement to keep working towards better fitness.
My question is about diet soda. About 80 to 90% of what I drink is just good old water. However, I enjoy flavor occasionally, so I typically have a few diet sodas every week, usually Diet Pepsi. According to the nutrition stats, other than a tick of sodium, these drinks are completely harmless. However, I have a hard time believing that the carbonation and caramel coloring aren't having some adverse effects. Can you provide any helpful insight in regard to the real nutrition concerns of diet soda? Thanks and keep up the great work.
Well, Mike, I used to talk about this a lot on my previous podcast, the Fat Guy Radio Show, and I'll put a link in the show notes that I probably have 6, 7, 8 articles that link to on this. But one of the ones that I wanted to share with you that I thought was the most interesting was from WebMD. And it's talking about drinking more diet soda will gain you more weight. And it's talking about overweight risks soar 41% with each daily can of a diet soft drink. And this was a study done in, this was in 2005, so a couple years ago, but it's from 8 years of data collected from the University of Texas. And they found that for regular soda drinkers, the risk of becoming overweight or obese was 26% if you drank a half can of soda each day, going up to 47% if you drink 2 cans each day. And this was the amazing thing. For diet soda drinkers, the risk of becoming overweight or obese for drinking just a half can a day was 36.5%, up to 57% for more than 2 cans a day. So I think that's really probably more telling of the individuals that are drinking diet soda, that they're it's being used as a crutch and they may be eating more calories thinking, hey, I'm only drinking diet soda. I have heard studies also that not so much about caramel coloring, but about the carbonation that actually inhibits the absorption of calcium in the body. So particularly for women, this is a real big a problem. If you drink a lot of diet soda, that, you know, they hit that that menopause stage, that they're already having problems with calcium, and diet soda is going to just make that even worse. And also, recently, there was an article posted at the Trainio Forum over at fattofitsupport.com about how drinking one can, yes, just one can of diet soda a day leads to a 34% higher risk of something called metabolic syndrome. And Jeff, I guess you had some more information on what metabolic syndrome is.
Well, the metabolic syndrome, I'm going to talk about the answer of the next question that comes in, but just to kind of hold that thought. But the study they're referring to when they're talking about the metabolic syndrome, I'm just reading from the study. The scientists gathered dietary information on more than 9,500 men and women ages 45 to 64 and tracked their health for 9 years. But the one-third who ate the most fried food increased the risk by 25% compared with the one-third who ate the least. And surprisingly, the risk of developing metabolic syndrome was 34% higher among those who drank one can of diet soda a day compared to those who drank none. And I guess just to let you know, metabolic syndrome, a lot of people call that pre-diabetic, but more info coming up in a second.
So Mike, you know, is one can of Diet Coke going to completely derail weight loss? I'm going to guess no. If you're drinking water to most of the day and you're going to have a diet soda, you know, I love a good diet soda. I admit, I know Jeff's partially addicted himself.
It's actually kind of funny because on fattofitsupport.com, our Trainio community, John Sanderson started a post on July the 6th entitled Diet Coke Addiction. And we've been talking about how to get off this addiction. And there's people in here that are truly addicted to Diet Coke. And I'll have to admit, I'm still trying to get over my diet soda addiction. And one thing that I think I'm finally going to be able to break the habit right now, the straw that broke the camel's back for me is I was getting my teeth cleaned last week. And they asked me if I was drinking a lot of coffee because I'm starting to get staining on my teeth from Diet Coke. So I think for myself, I am truly going to be trying to stop here. And actually on the forum here, I just said a challenge for people who want to try and go 100 days without a diet soda starting on August the 1st. So if you're interested, head over to fattofitsupport.com and you can put your name in there on the challenge that we just started today. And the next question comes from Heather. And she writes, "Hi, Russ and Jeff. I'm addicted to your show. Thanks for all the great factual content without all of the fluff. It is refreshing. I'm just 40, and although in relatively decent shape, my family has a predisposition to diabetes, and I just found out this recently when I did a glucose tolerance test. The straight blood test did not reveal it, but when I was pregnant, they provided this glucose test where you drink a disgustingly sweet sugary concoction to see how your blood sugar reacts every half hour for 3 hours. When I was pregnant, the numbers were high, and I had to be on a restricted diet. And 2 years later, my numbers came back high again without being pregnant."
And she continues, "My mom only got diagnosed after she almost died from a diabetic shock attack. Her doctor hadn't done any blood sugar tests in 5 years. By the way, my mother and myself are apple-shaped. Since my mom was recently diagnosed at age 70 with diabetes, I can see what is on my horizon. And I now try maintaining a relatively healthy diet and exercise with lower processed food intakes and sugars. It is a challenge, especially when you don't really have a diagnosis of diabetes. I know I can cheat, but really I'll end up cheating myself 20 or 30 years down the line. I wonder if a lot of people out there think they don't have high blood sugars because they are not tested correctly."
All right, now there's a lot in this email. So what I'm going to do is talk about diabetes in general for people who aren't too familiar with it. Now, if you're normal and you get a blood test and you get tested anytime before or after you eat, your blood sugar is going to be about the same. Now, what insulin does in your body is it gets released into your bloodstream to take the sugar out of your blood and move it into your cells. Now, what metabolic syndrome is, and this is what I alluded to in an earlier email, metabolic syndrome refers to the symptoms of being overweight, having high blood pressure, high blood sugar, high cholesterol, and a sedentary lifestyle. Now, if you have metabolic syndrome, so you have some or all of these characteristics, most of these people will develop diabetes later in life. because you're overweight, high blood pressure, after time, you're just going to get diabetes if you're not watching what you're doing. Now, there is no such medical term called pre-diabetic. It doesn't exist. You either are pregnant or you're not pregnant. You either have diabetes or you don't. You can have metabolic syndrome, which means you have all of these things which will probably lead to diabetes if you don't change your lifestyle. But that doesn't mean that you're pre-diabetic and there's nothing you're going to do to stop this diabetes from starting. Now, if your doctor says that you're pre-diabetic, they're probably just talking about metabolic syndrome or that you have impaired glucose tolerance, which after tests, they can tell you about that. Here's how you get type 2 diabetes. This is the diabetes that's associated with people who are overweight and high blood pressure, etc. So first of all, stage 1. Now this is assuming that you're overeating and obese. Your cells start to become resistant to the insulin in your body. So you eat a lot of stuff, the insulin is released into your blood to try and get all of that sugar out of your blood into the cells. And what happens, your cells don't really notice that there's a lot of insulin in the blood anymore. They're no longer affected by insulin as much. Now, stage 2, your body starts producing more and more insulin. Because the cells no longer notice that there's lots of insulin, your body starts producing more and more insulin to try and get the sugar out of your bloodstream into your cells. Now, what happens once your body is producing more and more insulin to try and compensate because the cells don't notice it? Your body tends to wear out its ability to produce insulin. So here's the summary. You start eating a lot of stuff and there's always sugar in your blood. So your body's always producing insulin. Your cells over time don't notice the insulin there as much. So then your body starts producing more and more insulin and eventually it wears out. So if you think of this, type 2 diabetes has a lot to do with wearing out your body's ability to produce insulin because there's always so much sugar in your blood. In the email, there's a line here that says, it's a challenge, especially when you don't really have a diagnosis, to eat healthy. Well, you really need to see this as an opportunity to use lifestyle modification to not develop diabetes. It almost seemed from the comments that it would be easier to live with these changes if you develop diabetes. But you got to think of it. It's always better to prevent a disease than to try and fight it later on. Type 2 diabetes that's caused from people being overweight and the metabolic syndrome, this can be turned around and this can be stopped without medications and without needing a lot of medical intervention. Now, if you get regular checkups, your doctor should be able to catch this. And if you have the signs and symptoms of metabolic syndrome, your doctor will most likely be checking your blood sugars along the way, so you'll know if you're getting into that risk category. So that's really everything that I have about diabetes. Wow. Now, it seems like I've been talking forever and ever. Let's move on to question number 7. It's just a quick one, and Russ is going to answer it here. And it is from Jessica. Jeff and Russ, hi, guys. I just wanted to say I love your podcast. I was hoping to hear about the new Wii Fit video game. I don't have a lot of time to exercise, and when I do, it is difficult to leave my house with small children. My husband and I have been researching Nintendo's new video game, Wii Fit. I hope to hear what you guys think about this. Keep up the good work.
Well, I have a Wii, and now Jeff, you have a Wii. And have you purchased the Wii Fit?
No, but I think I'm going to be looking into it.
You know, I thought about it too, and my wife was real interested in it also. And so, because I don't have it, I went looking for information, and I think the best place where I find this kind of info is Consumer Reports. They take these items, and they give it to their employees, their testers, and they check it out, and they give you their honest opinion. And they're one of these places that I go for, you know, if I'm going to buy a new toaster, it's the first place I go. If I'm going to buy a new DVD player, I go there. So I went there and checked out what they had to say about the Wii Fit. And they did a real thorough investigation of it. It's kind of like a scale. And it hooks up to your Wii, and it measures your weight, and it tells you whether you are, you tell it how tall you are, and it'll tell you whether you're overweight or not, whether you're obese. And it will change the, they have these little characters, these Mii characters. And it will change the look of your Mii character to be very large if you're obese. And as you, if you lose weight, well, it'll shrink you down on the screen. So it gives you a little visual feedback there, like, oh, I want to get my Mii character down. So it's kind of providing a little motivation there. And there are 4 things that you can do with the unit. It'll teach you yoga. It'll have you do some strength training. It'll have you do some aerobics. and some balance games, which are kind of just the more fun activity on the Wii. On the testing, the yoga, they found that it was actually very easy to not do the yoga positions correctly, yet trick the machine into thinking that you did the yoga correctly. So they suggested if you want to do yoga, go ahead and go and get an instructor that can teach you how to do these moves correctly. That was very interesting. And strength-wise, it really just was having you do push-ups and torso twists, leg extensions and lunges. And, you know, some of them found them were, the women on the panel were bigger fans of this than the men. But actually, that was one of the more enjoyable things that they liked about the Wii Fit. Third one, again, was aerobics. And, you know, it was really a lot of stepping and pretending like you were doing a hula hoop. So that was kind of their, just it's getting your body moving. Again, I mentioned the balance games were just kind of the fun part of it. And God, my take on it, from what I read on the article, was it's really kind of a, I would call it a gateway drug. You know, it gets somebody who is into video games off of the couch and gets them moving. And I think hopefully that if somebody does this, and if you get a Wii Fit, and I'm not saying don't get it, I'm not saying get it, but if you just take a look at this article saying, okay, if I do these things, it's going to get me in better shape. A little bit is better than nothing. And I think the Wii Fit is that little bit. It's not going to get you to lose a bunch of weight. It might get you, if you're not doing any activity right now, it definitely will help. You know, we have a game called Mario and Sonic at the Olympics. You wouldn't think this was like a grand game for working out. But it is a Olympic style events on the game, on the console, and you really have to work and move your arms back and forth. And I kid you not, I would put that game against the Wii Fit any day. I have gotten sweatier and sorer with that Olympic game than I could ever believe. It's an amazing little workout, and you know, my son and I will do it for an hour. And we are both drenched in our family room, sweating. And so, you know, again, movement versus none is going to be better. And, you know, I would like anybody out there, if you have a Wii Fit and have a personal a recommendation, whether positive or negative, I'd like to hear that.
Well, I think the most important thing here is it doesn't have to be the perfect exercise. As long as it's something that's motivating you and you do every day or every second day and it gets you motivated to get in shape and lose weight, it doesn't really matter what it is. I know myself, if I was seeing a little cartoon character myself every day and wanting to get, you know, smaller and thinner every day, it might be a gateway drug in the sense that it might get me doing more exercise and eating less if I'm more accountable because I'm stepping on this Wii Fit platform and turning on the game every day. So I don't see anything wrong with it. My wife's interested in it, so I will probably end up getting one in the near future myself as well.
All right, now we're going to get on to question number 8. And this one is kind of a combination of a bunch of different questions that we've received about different weight loss supplements. And so it was kind of nobody asked this particular question, but we kind of just took all those questions and put them into one. And here it is. What do you think about 5-HTP, ephedra, guarana, and other natural herbs out there for supplements?
Now, what we started to do is we were looking into all of these different supplements, and there's a couple other that people sent that I had never heard of. And it got me thinking that one thing we don't do on this show is talk about the little tiny things, the supplements and things that we think might give you that extra 1 or 2 calories that you'd burn per day. You see, when I look at the big picture here, I think that there's so much information out there and so many little studies that talk about if you have, you know, 0.5 milligrams of garlic every second day in your first meal of the day, it's going to improve your metabolism by 3%. And then the next study that comes out and says, if you have guarana in the first thing in the morning, every fourth day, it's going to do this for you. And then people say, if you take this 5-HTP every week, you know, and people hear all of these tiny little studies and they learn all this information and they get overloaded. And then it's just people become paralyzed. They don't know what to do. The problem is, all of these studies don't teach you how to eat. It doesn't tell you how to eat, how to cook, what you should be eating, and when. They're just giving you little pieces of information that are not helping you out. Now, on this show, we're trying to give people the big picture. about how to be thin and healthy and fit for the rest of your life and never have to diet again. And my big thing is that you should try and model people who are successful. So if you're looking at your neighbor who seems to go jogging every Sunday, you see them going out and they're doing active things and they never seem to gain any weight, they're probably not taking a whole ton of supplements to try and keep their metabolism sped up. They're probably just eating a little less and exercising a little more. And that's something that people can do for the rest of their life instead of trying to follow all the news and doing the latest and greatest new supplement or herb or spice or whatever it is. So if something really great comes out that seems to have a huge effect on people, more than maybe 20 or 30 calories a week that is going to burn extra, it's not worth it to spend your money on that kind of stuff. Just eat a little less, exercise a little more, and you will do fine and save your money for a gym membership or a cookbook or something like that. So we didn't want to say that, you know, all the people asking those questions, and we responded on what we've heard about those supplements to those people, but we just didn't want to try and change our show into just what is the latest, greatest little thing that might help you out. Get the big picture done. Once the big picture is done, then the extra 1 or 2%, sure, then go out and buy some of the stuff. But for now, worry about the other 98% of losing weight and being healthy.
All right, good advice. And this is our last question here for the day, and it is from Jim. And he writes, "Hi, my name is Jim. I decided to change my life at the age of 38 and 305 pounds. I quit smoking, quit drinking diet soda, and started eating right and said, what the heck, might as well join the gym." So I just want to put a little footnote in here that when Jim just said he's going to quit things that are bad for him, he quit smoking and Diet Coke. So what does that say for you? Anyway, continue. "Although I was eating better and more often than ever, I had been at a plateau for a couple of months. I ate fruits, veggies, and only fish or chicken as my main protein. I worked out 3 times a week with resistance training and 5 sessions of cardio a week. I was baffled and stuck.
After proving to my wife that I wasn't going to quit right away, she rewarded my efforts with an iPod. Thank God for podcasts. It didn't take long for me to find your show and was immediately hooked. The first show I downloaded dealt with wanting to lose weight too fast, eating enough calories so you don't go into starvation mode, and proper rest. It dealt with all of the doubts, fears, and misinformation I was dealing with. I was working out way too hard, way too often, and on about half the calories I needed a day.
I raised my calories, realized weight loss is not a race, and took time to recover. What do you know? I slid below my plateau and have since lost another 2 pounds. Not record-breaking, but reason enough to rejoice for me. Thank you for your honesty and no-nonsense approach to actually helping people."
Well, I think this last email really summarized what our goals in this show are. People who will finally understand that losing weight isn't a race. Now, Russ, wasn't there just a comment on the blog about your weight loss?
Yeah, there was. And I apologize, I don't have that in front of me right now, but it was to the effect of, "I thought Russ is losing weight too slowly. And, but then realized that, you know what? It's not a race. And you put this weight on over 10 years and you shouldn't expect to take it off and have it stay off by doing it in, you know, 3 months or trying to do it as fast as you can. It's a slow process. I mean, you burn the fat that you put on for that larger length of time.
And I mean, you're down, what, 36 pounds in almost 9 months. And people think, well, that's really nothing. But I know a lot of our listeners who've been with us for these 9 months, they're probably thinking, well, I went on 4 diets in the time that Russ has lost 36 pounds, and I've tried and failed and tried and failed. I lost 40 pounds and gained, you know, 36 back, and then I starved myself for another month and a half. And then they think, oh, look at Russ. He's gradually been losing along the way. You don't really have this huge risk of gaining it all back when you're changing the lifestyle.
Yeah, how often do you hear somebody say, you know, yeah, I lost 20 pounds in, you know, 2 months, and then next time you see them, you know, a month later, they've gained it all back. Weight loss that fast is just, it's not real. You know, you're losing water, or your body is just going to fight back and just get those pounds right back on.
You know, and you hear people, they say, well, I know how to lose 20 pounds in a month if I have to, because I've done it over and over again and I've learned the tricks to do this. Why would you want to do it over and over again? You know, it just brings me back to something I said a couple months ago. that if you have a friend who's a seems to be more of an athlete and doesn't have a lot of body fat, and if they break a leg and 6 months later they take off that cast and they've gained 40 or 50 pounds, they somehow seem to get back to the weight they were. It's not that they're going on a crash diet to get down there. It's just now that they're moving more and they're exercising more, they're not eating any different, but the weight just naturally comes off. So we've always said, figure out how much you would be eating at your goal weight and start living that lifestyle. And believe it or not, the weight goes away. You got fat because you were eating the lifestyle of a sumo wrestler. And eventually you became a sumo wrestler. You eat like a thin, active person. You become that person. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just going to happen naturally. It's not going to happen overnight, but it does happen.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sitting here a living testament to that on the Fat Guy Radio Show. I really didn't focus on changing my lifestyle. I was looking for, you know, a gimmick, some little life hack that could get me a few pounds off. And, you know, I did a kind of an Atkins style diet. I just tried everything. And, you know, I was following a diet. I wasn't changing my lifestyle. And I think it's different this time. I'm going here on a cruise in a couple days. And while I haven't ultimately reached my goal here, boy, I am looking a lot better and feeling a lot better than I did 9 months ago. And that's really what it comes down to, is I'm fitter and I feel better.
Yeah, that is awesome. Because I remember you lost a lot of weight really quick when I was listening to that old show. And then when you stopped giving your updates each week of how much weight you're losing, I knew that you'd kind of burned out and were tired of losing weight, and I'm sure it was slipping back on. I mean, right now, if you slip a little bit, you're only going to maybe maintain for a few weeks, right? Like you're not in a horrible place where you're starving and you want to eat so much more because you're eating a decent amount of food.
Exactly. Though here on this cruise, I'm planning on eating a little bit more. But you know what I'm actually very excited about too is that gym. So I'm going to balance the two out. So that's kind of what it's all about. Balance. Balancing the right amount of food with activity and getting down to that fit weight and staying there.
This show here, we had so many different emails that came in with a variety of questions. That's why we dedicated the whole show. But you can still send us your emails and we'll cover them on the regular show. And if we don't answer it on the air, it will probably become a topic that we'll talk about in a future show.
Right. And the first way to get a comment or a question to us is on the website at fattofitradio.com. You can leave a comment there on one of the stories.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is by leaving a voicemail, by clicking on the Call Me button on the right-hand side and entering your name and phone number, and you will get a call back to leave us a free voicemail.
Or you can always join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, Jeff. Well, we're going to skip our recipe. We're going a little long this week, so let's go right into the homework. What kind of homework should people at home do this week?
Well, we were just talking about how people can contact us, and the homework is for people to send us your questions and topics that you want us to discuss on the show. Because remember, earlier I said that there's four parts to weight loss: the information, the eating, the exercising, and the motivation. So let us know what you need for information, and we will give you that information.
Very good. And what is our quote for this week?
And the quote is from Ralph Marston: "Your goals minus your doubts equals your reality."
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. And thank you, everybody, for sending in all those wonderful questions and comments. We really enjoyed answering those questions, doing a little research as well to help get that information out to you. And thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.